On a Friday evening, it's okay to sit closer to the podium on my left and on my right. It's just the central area here we try and keep free for the camera. But on the left and the right, there's many, lots of spaces over in the wings here. You're most welcome to come in there. That's the way to go, yeah. Otherwise you're all squashed up over the back there. Very good. Very good, thank you for coming in. Excellent. So for this evening's talk, I always like to choose some aspect of life and some aspect of traditional Buddhism, try and put them together. So those of you who get books out from the library and read all about this type of Buddhism and that type of Buddhism and part of these teachings, you get them explained for you. But I am not going to just repeat what you read in books, because you can do that by yourself. I always like to take something and twist it around and make it so that you're seeing it from a new angle. And not to be controversial, because just, you know, comparing one type of Buddhism to another type of Buddhism really, really doesn't cut it to me. I like to actually to take the different types of Buddhism and twist them around and make use of everything which we can find in these different types of Buddhism. And today I am going to talk about the Pure Land. And for many people, if you are devout Theravada Buddhist, you will think, what? You can't talk about that stuff. And those of you who go to Mahayana temples will say, at last. But be careful, because what I'm going to say is not what you expect. If it was, there'd be no point coming here. So, to start off with, the idea of Pure Land Buddhism for many people, this is just their, you know, understanding, which I'm going to just twist around and make more useful. Their idea is that, you know, this Buddhism is very hard. Having to keep precepts is difficult, especially in business. You know, sometimes it's only a white lie. There's no such thing as white lies. But that's what we like to say. And it's only a little bit of alcohol, not much. It's Christmas, it's New Year, it's only a tiny bit. You know, come on, Ajahn Brahm, middle way. Don't go to extremes. And they say, well, you know, just... I always wonder about that, the five precepts, not intentionally killing, not stealing, not committing not lying, not committing adultery, not taking alcohol or drugs. They always say, just a little bit for alcohol. The other four, they don't say, just a little bit of murder, doesn't matter. Just a little bit of stealing, bank robbery, just a little bit of adultery, doesn't matter. Of course it does. But, you know, you can understand people, you know, they just want to have fun in life, sometimes the pressure's on them, so... It's so tough being a Theravada Buddhist, and also just having to meditate all the time. Oh, crikey. For some people, when you meditate, because they get bad instructions, they think it's difficult. And so, and having to give donations to monasteries and to temples, oh, just is enough. You have to pay taxes for this and taxes for something else, and now you have to give a donation on a Friday night. Oh, crikey. So people, they always want what we call the easy way, the shortcuts. And that is why that throughout history, we're always trying to find the easy way to get enlightenment, the shortcut to heaven, the way where you can get everything you want and still get enlightened at the same time. Now, the easy way. And so a long time ago, somebody invented another one of the easy ways. Actually, there's another little story about the easy way, which I usually tell on retreats. I don't really tell here, because somebody, they told me this story of a Sri Lankan man. Don't worry about it. I'm not bagging Sri Lanka. It's just a funny story, that's all. Could have been a Thai man. Let's call it a Thai man for a change. A Thai man. He was what we call in Buddhism a Waisak Buddhist. It's like an Easter Christian. You only go to the church once a year. And so he'd only go to the temple once a year on Waisak. And it's only because his wife made him go there. And his life was hopeless if he, hell to live if he didn't do what his wife said. One day a year. It's a holy day of the year. Go to the temple. Waisak, please. So he went there. He was a businessman. And as a businessman, he liked making money, just doing deals, working in the businesses here and there. Quite a wealthy man. But even though he was wealthy, he still didn't like giving any donations. But Waisak, I suppose I'd better. And he was wondering, just listening to all his boring sermons and meditating with his legs aching, can't there be an easier way? And he happened to listen to one of these sermons by one of the monks. And at this sermon, the monk mentioned that this is classic Buddhist teachings. The most important time is your last moments before you die. And if you have a brilliant, beautiful, good thought as your last thought before you pass away, then your next life will be great, maybe even get reborn in a heaven realm. And the monk was saying that the best thing you can think about before you pass away is what they call in Buddhism the triple gem, Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. And if you can think of those three things, the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, as your last thought before you pass away, then you're guaranteed 100% to go to heaven. No questions asked. So this businessman, I don't have to keep precepts, I don't have to keep all these rules. All I need to do is Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. I don't need to give donations. No, as long as you think of Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, just as your last thought, then you go to heaven. And he thought, wow, at last I know how to work the system. So he said, all I need to do is to make it sure I don't have to go to temple anymore. I can stay in the shop doing business. I can watch the TV. I can go and get drunk. I don't have to do any of those things. All I need to do is make sure I think of Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. How can I achieve that? And he came up with this great idea. Because it just so happened he had three children, three sons. So as soon as he got home, he got a lawyer. And he officially changed their names to Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. Because he knew, like even today in Australia, when you die, your children are by your bedside, in the hospital or at home. And sure enough, it worked according to plan. When he was on his last few hours of life, his three devoted children were next to him. And he was looking at them, thinking, Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, I'm going to go to heaven. Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, going to heaven. His plan was working perfectly until it just so happened he was chanting Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, his three children, I'm going to heaven, no trouble at all. Until he suddenly the thought arose in him, my goodness, if my three children are here by my bedside, who's looking after my shop? And that's when he died. So the point is, there is no shortcut. You can't work the system. Even your last thought is a sum total of all the thoughts you've ever had before. How many of you, I'm going totally off the subject of Pure Land now, as usual. How many of you have had those experiences where you think you're going to die and your life flashes before you? Because I had that experience when I was about 19. I was walking in the cliffs of Scotland by myself. And I lost the path, and I went along a sheep track instead of the proper path, by myself, a long way away from anywhere. And I had a big, heavy backpack on, not like these light ones these days, these namby-pamby backpackers. This was a really heavy, old-fashioned one, heavy, everything inside of it. And that I couldn't see, I checked afterwards, grass had grown over the edge of a track which had been eroded. So when I stepped, my left foot went into thin air and I fell. And because of the weight of my backpack, it twisted around. And I was falling down this cliff, went past, 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 past. I really thought I was going to die. So many meters, this vertical cliff. And that was the time. I was only 19. Okay, not much had happened to me in those 19 years, but still the most important parts of my life were literally flashing in front of me. And it was just like that classic experience that happened to me. And of course, what happened next was I felt solid earth underneath my feet. You know, I just bent my legs to take the fall, rolled over, got up. And that's when I was so surprised, because the cliff was only about 3 meters. And I couldn't believe it. And that's another thing, whenever you actually have, you think you're going to die, time goes slowly and just distances, they get exaggerated. I honestly, I was really surprised, only 3 meters, and to me it was like going past, because time was getting really weird and just distorted. But certainly my biggest memories of my life that far just flashed up in front of me, just like they say when you are really dying. It's a great experience to have. I only just lost a toenail, that was all, other than that I was fine. But, you know, it was amazing just how time was distorted and all my memories came up. So you can't fake these things, this is just what happens. But because many people, they would love to go to heaven or get a good rebirth or do something, because Buddhists believe in this life after death. Again, if you don't believe in reincarnation in this life, don't worry about it, because you certainly will in your next life. And that's an old joke, but it comes in. So whatever, we're concerned about what happens to us after we die, and so that too difficult to meditate, too difficult to get precepts, you know, to fill in your tax returns properly when everyone else, you think everyone else is doing this. I'm always honest with my tax returns. I never lie on my tax returns, because I don't earn any money. I don't have to, because I don't earn anything. I don't have to fill in tax returns, thank goodness. But if, to make it easy for you, this idea came up in Buddhism many centuries ago, that all you need to do, the great compassion of a Buddha, the great wisdom and kindness, just trying to make it easy for everybody. So they said that all you need to do is to chant the Buddha's name, just chant the Buddha's name, especially when you're about to die. And then you can't get enlightened yet, but you go to this beautiful realm they call the Pure Land. And in the Pure Land, you have everything you want. You just need to think of it. You just need to think of fish and chips appear in front of you. You just need to think of your favorite music, and you can hear Elvis Presley straight away, just like he was live. Whatever you like is just there for you. And then the Buddha is in this realm as well, and then you have great fun there, and eventually you just get enlightened from there. You never have to suffer ever again. It's called the Pure Land. And you know, it is so attractive that many people devote their life to that. So what does it really mean? And what it really means is, this is the Pure Land. You've been reborn into it already. So welcome, you are here. You don't need to do any more chanting. You've arrived. But what do I mean? This can't be the Pure Land. You don't get everything you want here. Even the last week, if you got everything you want, no way. I wanted to be cool yesterday, especially yesterday afternoon. It was boiling hot. So is this the Pure Land? And it's not getting what you want. It is, as somebody was talking to me earlier on, it's in the great words of that great philosopher, Mick Jagger, you don't always get what you want, but you find sometimes you get what you need. Remember that one? It's the other thing on the Let It Bleed album. But anyway, that is what the Pure Land is. You don't get what you want in the Pure Land, but you get what you need. Now that is the essence of this talk today. Sometimes we think that life goes wrong. Like recently, now for those overseas, you may not have seen the news here in Western Australia, we've had lots of bushfires here, and really big ones. People have lost their houses. People have just lost their businesses. Surely that can't be a Pure Land when we have these great bushfires where people lose so much stuff. We used to have a good economy here in Western Australia. Now it's gone down. We used to have jobs. Now you don't. You used to be healthy. Now you're sick. You used to have your mother and dad. Now they're dead. You used to have... Is this really a Pure Land? If... Wow, someone's laughing at my jokes. This is amazing. And I haven't really started the jokes yet. Okay, I'll do the joke now. I had a joke for you. Again, you'll find out what I mean by Pure Land again in the middle. And this was actually courtesy of... Where's Jake gone? He's gone. Always a religious joke, something pertinent. There was an interfaith conference. And so, interfaith service, not a conference. So this fellow went, you know, to see how the different religions would do things and stuff like that. And at the end of the conference, this Christian pastor came up to this guy, looked at him, and put his hand on the guy's head and said to him, "By the power of Jesus Christ, you will walk today." Really serious. And this guy said, "Are you nuts? There's nothing wrong with my legs. I can walk already. You crazy idiot." And he was just worried about these stupid religious people. But then a rabbi came up and did the same. "By the power of Abraham and all the prophets, ye shall walk." He said, "Get out of here. My legs are fine." Whew. And then he was really surprised when the Buddhist monk came up to him as well and says, "By the power of my great compassion, today you will walk." And he said, "You're all nuts. You're all the same. Christians, Jews, Buddhists, you're all the same. You're all crazy. You know, you should get a brain." But then when he went out of the hall, his faith in religion suddenly just rose so much because he found that someone had stolen his car. "Today you will walk." It's not a bad one. Thank you. Anyway, so anyway, back to the Pure Land. So in the Pure Land, you don't get the jokes you want, but you get the jokes you need. And that's important. Because look, for all of you who are looking at that news, "Oh, that's dreadful, that's terrible, bushfires." I'm just using this as an example because this is pertinent to people here. And some of you who've been around a long time may remember, I remember because I still know the date, January the 31st, 1991. That day was the hottest day ever in Perth, 46.2 degrees. About 2 weeks later, it was hotter. And I was in monastery in Serpentine, Bodhinyana, in the afternoon, writing to a friend how hot it was that afternoon, when somebody knocked on the door and told me there was smoke coming. We had a huge bushfire, right, came right through our monastery. And you'd think it was hot beforehand. It was much hotter afterwards. Seeing a big crown fire come right through the monastery where many of you visit, Bodhinyana Monastery in Serpentine. And I was there at the time. And it's incredible the power of nature. Because when the flames hit, the trees don't ignite. They explode! And it's an incredible thing to see. Because what happens, you all know the science behind it, when it gets that hot, you know, all of the oil in the leaves, and also in the bark, the eucalypt oil, which is supposed to protect it, to keep the water in, you know, in the hot days, that evaporates. And that makes this blue mist around the trees. That's where they get the blue mountains from. It's blue because in the hot weather, the eucalypt oil evaporates and forms this mixture of oxygen and oil, evaporated oil. It's explosive. And when it goes up, it is like bombs going off in the forest. Huge amounts of power coming up. And when that came, of course, we were all well prepared because we are monks. Except one person. This one person, interesting guy. He was an Afghan man. And he, was he Afghan or Iranian? I think it was Iranian. He fled to Afghanistan after the Cultural Revolution in Iran. Cultural Revolution, Islamic Revolution in Iran. Fled to Afghanistan as a refugee. And then the Russians came into Afghanistan, so he fled somewhere else and got a UN passport. And eventually he was in Malaysia. And that's where he got interested in Buddhism. And he was going to one of the temples in Kuala Lumpur for a talk one evening. And he was filling up with gas, you know, the station. And a guy serving the petrol was just asking him, he said, "Oh, where are you going tonight?" He said, "Oh, I'm going to the Buddhist temple, listen to a talk." And in Malaysia, if you're a Muslim, you cannot go to a Buddhist talk. So the guy sort of at the petrol station called the police, and the police came and said, "Where are you going?" "I'm going to a Buddhist talk." "You can't go to a Buddhist talk." He said, "Why not?" He said, "Because you're a Muslim." "I'm not a Muslim, I'm a Buddhist." "What's your name?" And his name was Muhammad. He lost the argument. So as soon as he came to Australia, he changed his name. So he was there during the bushfire. And I don't know why this happens. I'll always remember this. We were hiding in the main hall, just protecting when the fire front hit. And then we got the orders from to evacuate. And this guy, this is where you get the word from, getting caught with your trousers down. For some reason, he decided to change his trousers. And as we were in the car waiting for him, he came running out without any trousers. He was evacuated without any trousers. Absolutely crazy. But, it just shows you, this is what happens in emergencies. The most ridiculous things happen. Anyway, there he was. So we evacuated. But afterwards, that was when I came back the day afterwards, because we evacuated, came back in the morning. You really thought that all that hard work building a monastery, it had all been destroyed. Because you saw the power of those flames, explosions. Nothing could survive there. And for me, it was great because I had to, I was the main builder at that time. I did all that hard work, all day long, day after day after day. Lynn, where's she gone? Now, she knows that in those days. Those people hit there in the early days. And I thought, it's all gone. So what should you do? Just start again. And that was this wonderful little test, because those people have lost their houses in Yarloop. There's nothing, 90 houses, 95 houses were lost last night, not tonight, the night before, in the huge fires. What do you do? Get in there, start again. And that's what I thought I was ready to do. But it's an amazing thing, when I got back in there, the first thing I saw were these gleaming steel roofs in the morning sunshine. Not one of those huts had been destroyed. And because I was there at the time, the chief fire officer came around and I was with him. And I always remember this. One of those buildings, he looked underneath it, he looked around it, and he looked all over it. And then he came to me and he said, "Ajahn Brahm, this should not be here." But it was. So it's like the power of that sort of, what Buddhist monks were doing. It actually worked. We saved our monastery. And so to this day, the faith is the main thing, but I told people our bushfire plan. I told a few people earlier, we've got so many monks at our monastery now that what are we going to do if there's a bushfire comes to our monastery in Serpentine? The nuns will probably do the same. We'll all line up in a line, and on the count of three, one, two, three, all blow. That's all. Now don't worry, we did got the proper gear and all sorts of stuff. But what you did know, that these tragedies, and there was nothing green left in that monastery after that bushfire. It was all black. The trees were like a war zone, like some battlefield. You go in there afterwards, there's no life left there at all. But it's just another challenge in life. It's just testing you out. Okay. This is what it's like. Now what are you going to do about it? Don't complain, because complaining is wasting time. What I was taught as a young monk, what I always remember by Buddhism, stop complaining. Rather light a candle than complain about darkness. Get in there and start building again. Clean it all up. And those of you who go to these monasteries now, you can see just how it's just a beautiful bush. A wonderful forest there. And if I still got a few of the photographs. If you'd have seen it, you would never believe it's the same forest. Okay, it's 25 years on. The forest actually regenerates because of these disasters. Same with human beings. It's the disasters in life which make us, give us a chance to regenerate. It's a pure land because it's not what we want, but my goodness, it's what we need to be able to really see the Buddha and get enlightened. Because when we get what we want, then we don't really get any wisdom at all. Life is far too easy. Yeah, it's comfortable, but to really grow, to become wise, to become even compassionate, you need to have some disappointments in life. Often say, if ever you've gone hungry, you've really gone hungry, you haven't eaten for a few days, when you know what it's like, you will never ever go past someone who's hungry without helping them. You just can't do it anymore. If you've really been alone, I mean terribly alone, no one at all you can talk to, call up, go and visit, then you will never be able to just ignore other people who are alone. If you've really cried, I mean really cried, you can't just stop and pass by someone else who's weeping. Do you understand that it's the suffering, the pain, the difficulties? That is an important part of life. That makes this world a pure land. Because by pure land, it doesn't mean that everything is nice and rosy and we get what we want and we have a wonderful time, just eat, drink and be merry. No! The real pure land is the where we have some disasters, we have some suffering, disappointments, pain, and that really starts to teach us much more than you'll be able to understand and learn from a monk like me or from reading books or listening to talks on YouTube. It's that experience of life when things go wrong, when everything is dead. Just like those winter times I used to have to endure in England. Sometimes whenever it gets too hot, like yesterday, I just cast my memory back to those freezing temperatures in London where icicles were forming on the bottom of my nose, where people would say they would urinate and before the urine hit the bowl, it was ice. Where you'd make a hot cup of tea and you'd just go to the toilet when you came back. The tea wasn't cold, the tea was solid. Now you may think that's exaggerating, but those are all true stories. Except the icicle one, I don't think that was true. But it's good enough to be true. The other ones were true. One of these monasteries we have over in England, really cold place. And so I always remember that cold, you know, when it gets hot, so I don't complain. Because look, when it is hot, it's the complaining which makes it really hot. But if you decide it's just heat, that's all. It will pass. It's not a big deal. It's a bushfire. It passes. The trees grow again. We grow again. Build up new houses. You know, in my history lessons from school, I used to talk about the Great Fire of London in 1660-something or whatever it was. And that Great Fire of London destroyed most of what's now called Central London, which gave the government, the planners, the architects, this clean slate so they could have this great freedom to build sort of an almost like a perfect city. And so if ever you go to a place like London, you think, oh, the buildings are just really nice. They wouldn't have been like that if they hadn't had that fire, which gave them the opportunity, you know, to actually to do things from scratch again. And even the sewage system was put in those days as well. Had a time, okay, you know, we didn't need to take down houses and get permission to dig this out and dig underneath there. A clean slate, open area, let's do this really well. And they took that opportunity. So yeah, it was a great tragedy, but an opportunity as well. And that's the things with the disappointments and tragedies of life. Yarloop, an opportunity to rebuild the town. And also, it's incredible, I remember that time of the bushfire in Serpentine. How, for once, we got to know all our neighbours. How we got to know all the people in the local council. How we were now part of things. When things go well, we don't need each other. So we think. But when things are a tragedy, it's amazing how many friends you have, and how it brings humanity back front and center of our lives, instead of just getting by or getting rich or planning holidays. The most important things of life become relevant and important in times of tragedy. So a Pure Land, a real Pure Land, is not when everything goes right according to plan. And in fact, you know, you should know that by now. Life is the series of unexpected events. Life is what you didn't plan. Plans are just dreams and fantasies. And they're just like novels. But real life is always the opposite of what you plan. So I understood that a long time ago. So I stopped planning things. Just let life happen. But then again, as I often say, people are afraid of not planning. Because they think, if I don't plan, things will go wrong and then I'll be in big trouble. But I've noticed, because what they said is absolutely true. When I don't plan what I'm going to do tomorrow, then things go wrong and I'm in trouble. But I notice when I do plan, things go wrong anyway and I'm in trouble. Both ways, I'm in trouble. So I decide to cut my losses and enjoy it before it goes wrong. By not worrying about it. It's true, you plan, you don't plan, it always goes wrong. So why not enjoy it before it goes wrong? By not planning so much, because you should know by now life is a series of unplanned adventures. Life is something like this really weird novel, twists and turns, totally unexpected. And of course, if you read any book or if you go to any movies, has Star Wars been shown in Australia yet? So how many of you have seen it and have told your friends what happens in the end? That'd be terrible, wouldn't it? Don't tell your friends what happened in the end. That's like me. If I could, you know, read your fortune and tell you what your future's going to be, suppose I told you exactly what's going to happen this year, 2016, and you could trust what I said was absolutely correct, and what was going to happen in 2018, 19, that would be terrible. That would be like, you know, you haven't seen Star Wars yet, and I'm telling you the ending. It takes all the fun out of life if you could predict the future. So we keep it interesting, unpredictable, and pure adventure. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of suffering, a lot of challenges. That is a Pure Land. Because the idea of the Pure Land is there you can get your wisdom, your compassion, your peace, not from just chanting, but from the insight drawn from experiences of life. There's no better teacher than life itself. And that is where you learn how to, these wonderful little techniques, how to cope, how to be peaceful. One of the greatest things you learn, we have this teaching in Buddhism, non-self. What that really means is life is out of control. You can't control it. Haven't you learned that yet? Are you still trying to control your partner? Come on, get real. You should know better by now. They're totally out of control. Your kids? So if you can't control your kids, you can't control your partners, now you're trying to control yourself? Come on. You try that for too long and you get crazy. So the idea of controlling, that comes from a sense of ego and self. Me trying to get things done and trying to control the world and trying to make it better. That is not the way. The way of Buddhism is not control, not ego, but compassion, kindness. So that's what we learn. We're not controlling to our partner, we're kind to them. We're not controlling our kids. We're being kind to them. I don't control my monks. I'm kind to them. And I'm so compassionate. I make them so soft, so malleable. I can do whatever I want with them. That's how it works. Come on, get smart. Your husband, just be so kind to him, so soft. Eventually, he's just like some putty, like plasticine. You can pull him, you can squash him, you can stretch him, do whatever you want with him. You know, with a bit of Buddhist wisdom. That's why people come here for, learning how to control your partners in life without controlling them. Compassion, kindness. Now that is what really works. So you're learning this. You know, sometimes people are slow learners. There's this great story, which I usually tell on retreats, and it's called the simile of the five types of horses. I love telling this simile. I should have told this simile every year here. The five types of horses. The first horse, the rider just gets up on the horse's back and tells it where to go. The horse goes there immediately. It's a very well-trained horse. Horse number two, the rider gets up there, tells it doesn't want to do it. So the rider has to get out the stick. But the shadow falls on the horse's back and the horse does what it needs to do. That's the second type of horse. The third type of horse is more stupid. The rider has to just tap it slightly, not hurt it, and the horse knows exactly what to do and does it. The fourth type of horse, whack, but only once. I'm not going to have that again. And then it does what the rider wants it to do. And the fifth type of horse, whack, 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 still doesn't know what to do. Have so much suffering, they still don't learn. So in life, the suffering, what type of horse are you? Everyone says the fifth horse. You hurt, you suffer again and again and again and again with life. You still don't learn. Come on. Arguments, difficulties, disappointments, frustration. Haven't you learned yet? So eventually we're here to learn, so we don't need to be whacked anymore by life. We know exactly what life is. We live within its parameters. We don't ask of life something it can never give us. That's called suffering. Suffering, pain. When you're asking from your partner something they will never be able to give you. They can't always be there for you. Sometimes they have to be there for themselves. Sometimes they need their own time. They're not always going to be in a good mood. Sometimes they're going to be cranky. But they're nice sometimes as well. Remember that as well. That's welcome to life. You can't always get governments who cut taxes. They're going to increase taxes as well. They're going to make mistakes. They're not perfect. You can't always have a climate which is perfect. Reminds me of a story. A guy in the 20s and 30s, great little story. He did a good business, invested, he made a fortune, more money than you can ever spend in a lifetime. He was in the United States. So he sold his businesses, had a huge amount of cash, and thought, I'm rich, I don't need to work anymore, but why spend the rest of my years living in a place like the United States? There's a whole world out there. So he went to the public libraries and got books on all the different places on planet Earth to find the place with the best climate, not too hot and too cold like Western Australia, just beautiful climate, just right, maybe in the mid to high 20s, and really peaceful, a place where no one knows about, no problems with politics or wars or terrorism, the most perfect place in the whole world where the people are nice and socially peaceful and calm, a very nice culture. And the place he found was an island in the Pacific, in the Solomon Islands, called Guadalcanal. And those of you who know the history, it was not well known in those days, just an idyllic hideaway. So he moved over there, bought a nice bit of land by the ocean, built a lovely house, and about 10 years later, two of the biggest battles in the Second World War took place. He went there for peace and quiet. And what did he find? Battles. First of all, the Japanese took over, and then the Americans came in and kicked out the Japanese with huge amounts of casualties and bombs going off. What it taught me was that you can try and find out the most perfect place in the world, and what happens? A battle happens afterwards, a bushfire, or tsunamis, or an asteroid from outer space hits it. There's no place you can hide in planet Earth if you try and find perfection unless you understand perfection is right here, right now, where you are, with whom you're living with. That's why when you understand what perfection is, this is the pure land. Like I said last week, every other week, just summarize it. Remember the story, the simile of the trees in the forest? Most beautiful trees are the crooked ones. You understand that simile, it changes your whole idea of what perfection is. You don't need to be straight. Your ideas of perfection change when you understand what this world really is. The most beautiful trees are the crooked ones. The most beautiful forests have endured the bushfires. The most beautiful, wise, compassionate people are the ones who've been through hell and come out afterwards. Wiser, compassionate, really good people. So this is the Pure Land, because this is where we can learn. So every time you have difficulties and problems in life, don't think there's something wrong with the world. This is testing us. Every year, every month, a different test the world sort of throws up at us. How are we going to deal with refugees, with terrorists, with global warming, with all the other difficult things which happen in our life? It's testing us. And if we didn't have those tests, there'd be no growth, no learning. As I did actually mention, I got sidetracked with my own random thoughts. Whenever you do get depressed, like I used to get depressed in the winter times in London. In fact, they used to have this type of depression called seasonal affective disorder in London. You know, SAD, SAD, it was called. Great acronym, seasonal affective disorder. Because everything was just so miserable in London in November, December, January. You remember, the sun never came up until about 10 o'clock in the morning. By 2 p.m. it was dark. Used to go to school in the dark, come home in the dark. And it was cold, it was raining, it was miserable. It didn't even rain properly, it was drizzle. Even the name drizzle, it's just a depressing word. So anyone who suffers depression, do not go to Europe at November, December, January, February. It just makes you much worse. And everything was just so grey and miserable. And the only reason why the British used to have a stiff upper lip, because it was frozen, it was so cold. They're really depressing in those places. But I remember somebody telling me, yeah, you look at the forest over there, everything is dead. No green. The leaves fall off the trees. So you just got these skeletons. No flowers, nothing in the forest, just dead stuff. Not even any animals, they're all hibernating. Much more smart than human beings. I thought, that's a good idea, I should hibernate for the winter and come out in the summertime, but my mother would not allow that, I had to go to school. But there we go. But people said, underneath the earth, just a 2 or 3 inches, insulated from the cold by, the soil, there's seeds just waiting, just full of life, full of energy, full of beauty, just waiting. And of course you waited, came to March, April, started getting warmer, rains came, snows melted, and this great explosion of life came up in the spring. It's an incredible thing to see. You miss that over here because you don't really have a spring in Australia. But this is such a contrast between death wherever you look, and just a sudden explosion of life just comes out everywhere. The animals come out from their burrows or their little hidey places, and they come out and they play full of life, birds flying all over the place, shitting on everybody. But that's the birds. But they've got to do it somewhere. Sometimes you just happen to be underneath. But this beautiful life coming up, from death. Or as somebody else once described it to me, another beautiful simile. Like you see those flowers start coming out. And you see the bud. Have you ever seen like a bud of a flower about to blossom, about to burst? Can you imagine that sheaf of very thick green leaf? Inside is these blossoms, these hundreds of petals. Really refined, just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's just like there must be such pain inside that green sheaf until suddenly it bursts. And this huge flower comes out. Out of pain, out of death, comes this beautiful reincarnation of hope. Out of this terrible ugliness, the tragedies, the soot, the dust, the blackened tree trunks of the bushfires, comes new life. Out of the fires which have devastated your life, disappointments, tragedies, out of that, something is just waiting to burst forth. Hope, compassion, truth. That's why this is the Pure Land. Because they said in traditional Buddhism, in the Pure Land, that's where the Buddha lives. What is the Buddha? It's not a person. It's a truth. It's the wisdom. It's the kindness and the compassion. And if anybody wants to know why we say that, it's because one of the greatest teachings of the Buddha, he said, whoever sees the Buddha sees the Dhamma, the truth, the wisdom. It's not the body, that's not the Buddha, it's just what it represents, the truth, the Dhamma, the teachings, the wisdom, the compassion, the love, the peace. That is what the Buddha is. And you cannot have that compassion, that peace, that deep understanding when everything goes according to plan. When you get everything which you desire. You only see the Buddha when you get what you need. Not what you want. You only learn compassion, truth. You only grow when there's these seasons which keep everything dark and grey. So everything can build up. Think of this beautiful growth of love, compassion, wisdom, the understanding of life. This is the journey of our lives. So when things don't go according to plan. For goodness sake, don't ever say things are wrong in my life. They're right. Like I keep telling you, whenever you get an illness, never ever go to your doctor and say, doctor, there's something wrong with me. I'm sick. You all know this one by now. You go and see your doctor and say, doctor, there's something right with me. I'm sick again. And if you do that, they know me now, and say, oh, you go to Nodamar on a Friday night, don't you? Oh God, here's another one of them. But it's true, it changes just the whole emotional response to sickness. When you say, there's something right with me, I'm sick again. What's wrong with being sick? Nothing wrong with it. What's wrong with having bushfires? It's part of the nature of the West Australian forest. Things haven't gone wrong, they've gone right. Giving a test. Opportunity to grow and do things better, to rebuild, to learn, to love. And when things go different to what you plan in your life, somebody dies unexpectedly or expectedly, or they're about to die and they don't die unexpectedly. That happens too, you know. I told people in Penang, I always get blamed, because I remember I told them, I went to this Chinese family once, they called me, can you please come to the hospital? It was Royal Perth. And they said, no, our father is in sick, he's dying, can you do some chanting for him? So I went into the ward, went into the room, and did my Buddhist chanting for them, and they blamed me because he got better. He recovered. And they really scolded me, said, Ajahn Brahm, we didn't want you to chant for him to get better. We'd arranged the funeral, we came to terms with his death, and now we've got to go through it all over again. Thank you, Ajahn Brahm. And so these days I tell people, you want me to do any chanting for sick people, what type of chanting do you want? Chanting to get better or chanting to die peacefully? Please let me know. Oh, people are just so difficult. But anyway, so this is where we have to understand, this is the Pure Land. This is the Buddha is living in this world. Truth is there for you to see. And you don't need to think that things have to go perfectly. That is not the Pure Land at all. That's a fantasy land. That's Hollywood. That's Mickey Mouse Land, Disneyland. Not the Pure Land. You are in the Pure Land. Welcome. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
Okay, here we go. We can do claps and sidus afterwards properly next time. Excellent. First one from Malaysia. I'm a doctor and encountered patients who don't care for themselves, and it's often frustrating as there's only so much one can do. Any words of wisdom I can impart to make them care for themselves? My patients are like horse number five. Whack, 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 whack. They still don't learn. Okay. Sometimes they don't care for themselves because no one has cared for them early in their life. They don't understand what care is. So sometimes you can teach them care by you just caring for them if at all possible. I know that in many hospitals, there are many people who just get very frustrated thinking no one cares for them, so they don't care for themselves. That's why we have these great hospital visitors. Just ordinary people, not doctors. Doctors, you've got too much to do, but lazy, just too busy. But other people on a weekend, on the holidays, or they're just retired from work, or they've got sacked from work, or whatever it is, go into the hospital and just, or old people's home, orphanage, just go talking to people. And get permission just to be sort of a visitor, and just to hang out with people and care for them. It's amazing what happens if you can care for somebody else. And they understand what care is. They can feel it from somebody else. And they can take that on board and do it to themselves. Amazing thing to do. You can stroke their hair. And then, okay, now you put your hand on your head and start stroking it. Learn how to care. Come on. Oh, that's nice. Oh, yeah, that's nice. Now I taught you how to care for yourself. So little by little, actually, you can actually, by other people caring for you, then you can learn how to care. So we need more volunteers. How can a person who tries to act with wholesome intentions deal with those who want to cause harm or when the results of the actions are unfavorable? If another person wants to cause harm, you've got wholesome intentions, the best thing is to have wholesome intentions at a distance. In other words, get out of the way quick. Run. So they want to cause you harm for some reason or another, so put yourself at a distance, physical distance and emotional distance from them, so that they can't harm you. Until the time comes you're strong enough, you become invulnerable. Because, you know, they can only harm you if you let them harm you. They can call you bad names, they can sort of even hit you, but even hitting you, it's only just a bruise. This is a sutta, teaching of the Buddha. And I quoted this on my last talk I gave in the monastery in Thailand before I came to Australia. And people thought it was very funny, except the Australian monks. Because in this, there was a monk in the time of the Buddha who wanted to go to this far-off country to take meditation and Buddhism to this far-off country, a bit of a missionary. And Buddha said, look, there's a really rough people in that country over there. You know, what would you do? What would you do if they called you names? He said, well, if they call me names, at least I realize they wouldn't be hitting me. But what if they hit you? Well, I'd realize they weren't sort of, stabbing with a knife. What happens if they stabbed you with a knife? Well, at least, you know, I realized they weren't killing me. And what happens if they killed you? Well, if they kill me, you know, I've got to die anyway. At least I'd die doing a good thing. He said, that's the sort of monk, you know, who's a real monk. Off you go. And I told that story just when I was about to go to Australia. And the Australian, they were not like that over there. And they weren't. It was only just a bit of fun and games. But unwholesome intentions, yeah, they may have unwholesome intentions, but I call them like stupid intentions. They're not really clever. Why are they acting out of stupidity like that? Saying bad names, hurting you. Why do people do that? That's craziness. It's craziness because a lot of time they know no better. So it's wonderful if you can actually give them some compassion, some time, some understanding, if at all possible. But sometimes you need to do that from a distance. That's why last week I mentioned if someone has unwholesome intention, they start shouting at you, scolding you. Give them the 10 seconds of silence afterwards. They just finished scolding you, shouting at you, and just sit there. 10 seconds, don't say anything. Just look at them. Give them an opportunity to reflect on what they have just done. What they just said and why they said it. 10 seconds, just stop. Be still. Even though you'd love to defend yourself, you'd love to sort of explain that they've got it completely wrong, don't do that. be silent for 10 seconds. Because then all they can do, the only thing they can reflect upon is what they've just done and said, and realize what a stupid thing it was. So that's one way how people's unwholesome, those who want to cause harm, they don't realize what they're doing and how stupid it is. So that's sometimes what you can do, if you're strong enough, if it's not too dangerous. And the last one, Mark from UK, is suffering required for growth. You can't really say it's required. You don't need to go looking for suffering. There's enough comes to you without you looking for it. So some people, that are these ascetics, you know, these people who go whipping themselves and Easter go, nailing themselves to a cross. That's really weird. That's really deviant. But you don't need that. You don't need to look for suffering. You know, just it comes looking for you. Too often, unfortunately, but it does. So, but when it comes, you're not what you look for. What you have to deal with, yes, that's what you need for growth. And I wasn't going to say this similarly, but I can't not say it now for Mark from UK. Again, one of the things you hear every other week, you go home and you tread in the dog shit. What do you do with dog shit when you get it on your shoes? You take it home with you. You don't scrape it off in the car park here. You take it home with you, and when you get home, you take your shoes into your garden and you scrape the dog shit off only under the mango tree. Because 1 year later, Mark from UK, I don't have mangoes in England, apples in England. Mangoes in Perth. Because 1 year later, Mark, your apples will be sweeter and juicier than all of your neighbor's apples because of the dog shit. It's true, isn't it? But you must always remember people's mistake, and this is the nice part of the story I always like telling. When you're biting into that juicy apple, it's so sweet. And the juice starts to dribble down your cheek. You must always remember what you are really eating. It's dog shit, isn't it? That's where it came from. But it's been transformed by the wonder of nature into beautiful apple or mango, whatever else you like. So that is why we say, yes, it's suffering required for growth. If you want juicy mangoes, sweet apples, of course you need a lot of shit. And that's the answer to your question. Okay, now last time we did sadhus and that was really all over the place. So first of all, we do the clapping. Very good. And now the sadhus. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. And somebody asked me last week, I think at Bodhinyana Monastery, or here, I forget where, and they asked me, what does sadhu mean? I said, you know what it means? It means awesome. That's what it means. So it means awesome, awesome, awesome. Okay, very good, that's it. Okay, let's go. It's 9 o'clock. I've had enough. Time's up. No questions here? Any questions here? No, good, thanks. Arahang Samma, we're going to do some bowing first. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddha Bhagavanta Abhivadeni Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami.